Last week was quite a week at federal court as a jury handed down guilty verdicts for two main players, former police chief Louis Kealoha and his deputy city prosecutor wife Catherine Kealoha. Alexander Silbert is the first deputy federal public defender who convinced the FBI to take on the case years ago. He joined us in the studio earlier this morning.
The speed of the verdict surprised us all because it was very complicated in terms of the jury instructions, understanding the conspiracy law. The verdict forms themselves were many, many pages. So given the number of defendants involved and the number of verdicts that they had to reach, coming back so quickly surprised all of us. It was a little bit nerve-wracking because it's a question of did the jury really understand the instructions and understand the verdict forms and how to fill them out. So we were all a little bit concerned about the speed of the verdict and did it show that the jury understood or not. But obviously I believe that given the outcome, which is a split verdict, and what I mean by that is all the charges against Mr. Shiraishi were, they found them not guilty, whereas they found all the other defendants guilty, means that they really did deliberate and did take their time to parse out each defendant and what they were responsible for. So I think in the end, what we saw was a very well thought out verdict by this jury.
And, you know, there is still the appeal process. So can you talk to what that will look like?
So an appeal is filed 14 days after sentencing. You can't file before that. So in a trial, in any trial that a defendant has, it's a matter of right to appeal to a higher court, in this case, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sitting in San Francisco. So this is a matter of right, and it's a matter of course. Any defendant will take this appeal. So they will file an appeal. And that process takes about a year once they file the appeal because there has to be written briefs filed to the Ninth Circuit by all parties and then oral argument and then a decision by the Ninth Circuit. So the appellate process in all could take a year to 2 years.
Okay, and that's after sentencing, which is?
In October. But those sentences, you know, the dates of October may or may not be continued for some of them because both Catherine Kealoha and Louis Kealoha have another trial to go through. She's got two more. There may be moves to continue her sentencing to get all those trials done. Same thing for Louis Kealoha. And then the other defendants may not want to be sentenced until the dust is completely settled. So things could be delayed even further.
What about those upcoming trials?
Well, the next trial is the fraud trial involving Louis Kealoha and Catherine Kealoha, and that's really a paper case. And as has been said by other commentators before, very difficult to defend against a paper case because it's just the paperwork that you filed mostly with a bank or to some other institution. Your handwriting's there. Your signature's there. That's very difficult to defend if you can show that that was fraud. Then the third trial is the drug trial related to Catherine Kealoha's attempt, allegedly, to cover up for her brother, who was a doctor, and his prescription of opioids.
So how soon could that second trial start?
It's scheduled for October. I don't see any reason at this point why that would be continued. But I would think that the selection of a jury is even going to be more complicated for that trial, given the publicity and the outcome of this trial. So we all heard about this trial being the first day being conducted at the Blaisdell with 400 potential jurors. I would think that the next trial is even going to be harder.
Okay, so it might be at the Blaisdell again?
Maybe the Blaisdell, or they may need to go to UH instead of Sheriff's Center. Yeah.
And the third trial, has there been a date set for that?
I believe there's been a date, but I'm not aware of it. It's definitely towards the end of the year.
There's been some thought that it's going to be harder for her to mount a defense given that the judge put her in jail the day after the jury came down with their verdict.
What people, I think, are saying about that is it's harder to prepare a defense when your client's in custody. And that's normally true in the sense of it's much easier to communicate with your client and to look for witnesses and to talk back and forth if a defendant is out and you can meet with them regularly. It becomes a little bit more difficult when you have to go to FTC every time you want to talk to your client. But in this case has been hanging around for a long time. I'm sure she's been discussing this case with her lawyer for a long time. And it's a paper case. It's not like you're searching for witnesses. So I don't think her being in custody is really going to impact at all her ability to present a defense if she has one.
What about her mental state? Because that became an issue and there was some discovery, I guess, during this trial.
She, of course, raised it early on to try to delay the case. I know in my particular case in 2014, there were issues related to her mental competency that came up. Judge Kobayashi has recently released and unsealed some of the pleadings in that case that had been filed under seal, which including a note from her doctor, Dr. Ito, regarding her mental competency back then. And this is back when she was making statements to HPD and to the postal inspector. There's a doctor's note saying she was mentally incompetent, legally mentally incompetent, to give depositions, to answer questions, to perform everyday work function. And that raised then, and it raises now, a serious question as to if she was mentally incompetent and found that way by a doctor, how could she be working? During that period of time, she indicted that huge gambling case, which everybody knows about and which was ultimately dismissed, and which then now there's a civil lawsuit. So that raises significant issues as to her competency and what she was doing as a prosecutor, and whether the prosecutor's office knew that, and the impact that may have not only on the civil lawsuit in the gambling case, but other cases she handled.
Right, because you can't use that as an excuse not to be deposed and yet be handling all these high-profile cases at the same time.
Absolutely. And if the prosecutor's office knew that, which I assume they must have, and yet they allowed her to work and to indict people, it's not only a problem for the cases she handled, it's going to be a problem for the prosecutor's office in terms of how could they let that happen. I said a long time ago that I thought that Chief Kealoha threw my trial by deliberately making a misstatement, in which in fact he was in part found guilty of in this case. And part of that was because I was going to be able to cross-examine Catherine Kealoha on this issue of mental competency. Both Catherine and Chief Kealoha knew that going into the trial. So that was part of my reason way back then of saying I believe that the chief intentionally created a mistrial so that I would not have that opportunity and not make that public.
When we sat down before this trial started, we had talked about, we were in uncharted territory. The fact that we had to have an outside entity come in to get to the bottom of this, I think speaks volumes.
In the sense that the federal system worked and did its oversight over state functions, which is part of what the federal government does and is supposed to do. So in that sense, it did work. It took many years to get here, but it did ultimately work. And the real question is, what do we do now to bolster and correct the state system to make it so that this doesn't happen again, that we don't need the federal system to step in, that the state system or the city and county system can create institutions that are powerful enough and strong enough and independent enough to provide proper oversight so we don't have to wait years and years and years and hope a federal government steps in.
And this case did cast a long shadow even over the Ethics Commission and some of the actions that they took, in particular with the executive director there, Chuck Tato, and Letha Dekaris, the investigator.
Right. The two unsung heroes here and the two people who still to this day have been hurt the most besides Florence Puana and my client Gerard Puana are Chuck Tato and Letha Dekaris, because they both lost their jobs and were somewhat humiliated in the sense that the way they were dismissed for doing nothing but trying to do their job and to investigate very powerful people. And because they were doing it at a time where no one really believed anything that they were saying or anything that we were saying on behalf of the Puanas, they lost their jobs, and I think it's taken a heavy toll on both of them. It was very difficult to get people to believe what we were saying and what the Puanas were saying and what the Ethics Commission was investigating. People just didn't want to hear it, and they didn't want to believe it. I know back when this investigation was just beginning, there were many people in government who didn't want to comment or wouldn't take a position or basically said, let's just move on, especially when the chief was resigned, and really didn't want to delve into it. And I think this verdict and the information that was heard from the witness stand from many, many different witnesses really has opened up people's eyes. And I'm really hopeful that this will create some meaningful change in state government so that something like this doesn't happen again.
Right. And all the way down, the police department, the ethics commission, the police commission, you know, we've seen some changes, but you want it to be lasting.
We've seen changes. I think the changes were forced. You know, the appointment of Loretta Sheehan and Mr. Levinson, you know, Supreme Court Justice Levinson, was forced because it was obvious that the police commission wasn't doing its job. So steps were taken to bolster that. I'm worried about backsliding on the police commission because subsequently other people who were appointed don't have the background or expertise that Loretta Sheehan has or Mr. Levinson. So I'm a little worried what's going to happen to the police commission if we let it slip back to the way it was. I'm very concerned about the ethics commission because it really has never recovered from what happened back when Mr. Tato was fired. And so there have been changes. Susan Ballard seems to be a very good police chief and really trying to clean house and make it a very professional police force again. These are all steps in the right direction, but more needs to be done.
And you've been in contact with the Powanas?
I have. On the day the verdict came in, I was speaking to Gerard Powana. He was speechless, very emotional, crying, could barely speak. You know, you have to remember, for him, you know, for 6 years of his life, he has not been believed. He's been ridiculed. His neighbors, you know, don't talk to him sometimes. So for him, this has been a very big moment in his life. And they had problems in their own family. There were family members who didn't believe him and sided with Catherine because they're all one family. So for Gerard Powana, it was very emotional. I know for Florence Powana, it was very emotional. She's very ill. It was great that the prosecuting team, Mr. Wheat and the FBI agents, all went to her house where she's staying and met with her and gave her a copy of the verdict forms. That was very generous of them, very honorable. It was great to see that. And I think she really appreciated it. You could see she really perked up from what the family said and was very alert and awake and responsive. And that was great that that happened. So I'm very happy for the Powanas about the verdict, and I hope they can move on now.
Right. So this isn't the end. This is really kind of the beginning.
There's a lot more to come. We still have to find out what's going to happen with the target letters from Mr. Conoscero and Donna Leong. There may be other charges coming against other individuals. Catherine Kailoa has not yet been charged with the obstruction counts involving her alleged ex-boyfriend and the Titos, because they've already pled guilty and admitted that she obstructed justice through them in the grand jury. Those charges haven't been filed, so there's lots more to come.
And the Titos, for listeners who may not know all the details.
The Titos were, they had a trust fund that was being overseen by Catherine Kailoa, and that money was all spent and taken allegedly by Catherine Kailoa. Then she got the Titos allegedly to lie to the grand jury on her behalf. One of the Titos, the older brother, has already pled guilty, saying that she got him to lie to the grand jury and that all the money was spent by Catherine Kailoa.
So much more to come. And we will be sitting down with Loretta Sheehan also to talk about what happens with the severance payout theoretically could be called back because now that there is a conviction against the chief. So much more to come.
Much, much more to come.
But thank you very much for sitting down with us.
You're welcome.
That was federal public defender Alexander Silbert talking about what happens now that there's a verdict in the Hawaii public corruption case involving the Kealohas and several former police officers.